Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Barely Backcountry Podcast. Today's guest is Ryan Haynes. Ryan is a bow hunter and he's also a photographer, so we have a really good conversation about both of those things. Ryan gives some good insight into what goes on in the photography world and kind of what you can do, even if you're a guy like myself where all you have is an iPhone. There's still some really cool things you can do with a phone. So give this podcast a listen. I hope you guys enjoy it. Before I get you into that, though, again, check out the podcast on social media. It's barely_backcountry_podcast on Instagram. And then my personal is c.dillashaw. Again, make sure you guys give the podcast a like, a follow, a share. All those things help out. But I will get you guys into this podcast with Ryan. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Barely Backcountry Podcast. Today we got Ryan Haynes on, who is a archer, he's a bow hunter, and he also has some pretty cool photography that he does. So, Ryan, how's it going, man?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So before we get into it, I'll just kind of go ahead and introduce yourself, tell people a little bit about what you do, and we can get into some stuff.
Yeah, man. So kind of like you explained just a second ago, I am just, I'm a hunter for first and foremost. Man, I love bow hunting. I've been doing it my whole life. And so that's kind of what I pride myself on. That's what I look forward to throughout the entire year is waiting for September and November. So other than that, I'm big into photography and just love anything to do with cameras. And yeah, so that's kind of what I do. I intermingle both of those together. And that's kind of how I live my life these days.
Awesome, man. How did you get into hunting? Was that something that you started as a kid, or did you get into that later as an adult, or how did that happen for you?
So I guess you could say, like, so I've been into hunting my whole life. My dad was really big into hunting, but not really big game hunting. I mean, he did, but a lot of it was waterfowl, upland, and things like that. And he did do some big game as well, just kind of where we grew up, the opportunity wasn't as much. So I guess later, maybe I was 12 or 13 or so, I started really peaking in interest in bow hunting, and then got with one of my good childhood friends, and we just kind of we had some land that we could access, and we found out that where we were, the bow hunting was actually really good, and the whitetails were abundant, and we started kind of learning each year from there, and by the time we hit around 18 or so, we were doing well and sticking some good whitetails. And it's kind of the last 10 years after that have just compiled into more addiction every year. So I guess I kind of started young, but I guess, you know, around that early teens where I started bow hunting.
Nice. What were some of your first like bow setups?
Oh man, actually it's really funny. I still have my original bow setup, the very first one that I ever shot. I used that bow for probably 5 years up until I was probably, 21 or so, 22. And it's a Forge Bow Company. They don't even make, Forge isn't even around anymore. It was a Forge Bow Company. The only reason I had it is because even at that time I had a long draw and there wasn't a lot of bows on the market that had the super long draws. My good buddy, his dad actually gave it to me. And it's just an old single cam. I mean, super harsh draw bow. And what's funny is to this day, back in 2016, I think, or 2017, one of those, with that bow, I actually I've killed a lot of good whitetail in my day. I've killed a lot of really good ones, but, that one's actually my biggest that I still have ever killed at 174. So the 25 inch inside spread. So it's, I still have that bow hanging up, and every year I talk about re-rigging it back up with an old sight and going out and seeing if I could stick something else with it one more time.
Yeah, that'd be fun to see. But where did you grow up?
I grew up in Texas, so North Texas actually is where I grew up. North of Dallas by about an hour is where I grew up, but I actually live only about 45 minutes from there still. I actually live on the border of Texas and Oklahoma on the Oklahoma side nowadays, so in Durant, Oklahoma.
Nice. So out there in Texas, it's pretty much all private land.
Yeah, and that's why it was so tough when I was growing up to kind of find anywhere, as the opportunity just wasn't as much, but you had to have some connections, and luckily we have those now, and where I grew up is actually, it's one of the only counties in Texas that is bow only. So you can't even hunt with a rifle no matter what time of year. So that's what makes it fun, man. I've actually, until this past year on a Bushnell hunt, I was already tagged out on bucks here in Oklahoma, but I got to it was my first rifle hunt ever. I've never rifle hunted. Funny enough, because the county, like I said, the county I grew up in is bow only. So I grew up bow hunting strictly and just had an addiction for it. So this past year, I popped a couple does with the rifle, and it was a completely different feeling.
Yeah, rifle hunting, I try to do a little bit of both. I mean, I certainly enjoy bow hunting, and it's, I prioritize it, but I'm not going to shy away from putting a couple rifle tags in my pocket every year.
Oh, for
It's
sure, man. The more opportunity, the better. I'm actually going to build out a rifle this year and see if I can capitalize on some of those Western opportunities as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially when you look at like doe hunts or cow elk hunts type things, like those, I'm going out there. I want to get it done pretty quick and fill a freezer. I'm not
For
trying to
sure.
chase a trophy or go on some crazy backcountry adventure with those ones.
Yeah, understood.
But cool, man. So at what point kind of in your hunting career did you start becoming interested in Western hunting? Because I've seen you do a little bit of some elk hunting recently.
Yeah, so I guess you could say after, so I graduated college in 2017. And life until that point was like anyone else's. It was I didn't grow up out west, so I didn't have the opportunity. My dad didn't really go out west, so I was kind of stuck whitetail hunting around here my whole life. And after college, when I finally had some time and some funds to be able to do some of this stuff, because it's expensive going out that far, like anyone else knows, it's an addiction that costs. So I guess it was probably 2019, and my first yeah I guess it had been 2019 is my first real I guess 2018 actually went on an antelope hunt out there. But 2019 I went on actually to Arizona on a high country muley hunt. I did that, and then in 2020 in January I went back for the rut. And since then I actually have not missed the rut down in Arizona for muley since. So it's a fun place down there. So I guess that would say around 2019 is when I started, and then now I'll try to make myself out there at least two or three times a year. And have been lucky enough to kill bulls every year since.
Nice. Let's talk about the Arizona thing first. How's that going for you? Because that's usually a pretty tough hunt, especially for non-residents, guys that don't have a ton of time to get out and scout. So how's
It's
that hunt been for you?
so with the regulation changes the last couple of years, it seems like Arizona Fish and Game is kind of making it a little tough on us. So I've actually had to switch tactics completely. I used to kind of hunt even during the rut more central, and then I've actually focused on the desert the last couple of years. It just seems like it's a little easier for me right now, and I know the area really well. But when I first got there in 2019 in the in the high country hunt, it was tough, man. I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, we got on some decent bucks, but nothing really that big, and had no clue. But went back and I figured the area out. Went back in January and kind of dropped elevation a little bit and figured that country out, and actually ended up coming away with a 178 inch double drop
Dang.
pine at 7 yards. So I took him home. So I got super lucky on that. What's really funny is I brought some whitetail tactics. I pushed in a little further, and I've been glassing a few good deer the whole week and blowing some stalks, and got into this almost like a meadow. Like I said, at this time I wasn't hunting desert, but it was almost like a meadow that was on top. You could see some elk tracks and a whole bunch of old elk wallows and things like that. So I get on top and I stalk up to this buck that's chasing this doe, and ended up actually missing him at 50 yards, and went up and got my arrow and sat down on this flat and started eating a breakfast burrito out of all things. It's like noon, and I was kind of down because I was like, this is my last day and I just missed my opportunity on at a solid over the counter buck. And so I was like, you know what? I'm gonna pull this rattle bag out and this bleat call, and I'm gonna see if I can, rattle him back in, because when I missed him, he didn't know what happened. So sure enough, just I sit down, I hit the horns for a second, throw a little bleat in there, and I hear something behind me, and I look back, and this just mega, just double drop time buck is just head to the ground, grunting, and he's just running straight at me. Like I'm blended into this tree really well in the shade. He has no clue I'm there. I reach over, grab my bow, and by the time I pull back, he'd seen me pull back, and he's at 7 yards, and just heart pumped him, and he ran 30 and piled up. So I got super lucky. I got super lucky that hunt. And years after, man, I've put some great stalks on some 200-inch bucks, some 180s, and the last couple of years. And I the last 2 years, man, that's a hard hunt. I actually missed a solid buck this year and missed one the year before. So it's not like I haven't had my opportunities every year. Yeah. It's part of the game.
For sure. Have you just pretty much been hunting mule deer, or have you messed around chasing coos deer at all in Arizona? Or,
you know, if the opportunity presents itself, I can I'll chase a koozie. But it's man, they just don't really get my blood pumping like muleys do. You know, it's like I respect them because of how hard they are to hunt and how hard it is to find a really good buck that you know, in that 90 plus inch range. And you know, last year we were there, my good buddy Joel with Whitetail Fit, he actually crept in and stuck a we measured it when we got back. It was a 97 or 98 inch koozie. So I mean, just a hammer of a buck. I mean, super old, super good deer, and it was fun. It was fun, but they just don't get my blood pumping. So if there's an opportunity, you know, and it's later in the hunt, I'll put a stalk on one, but it's not what I go for first.
Yeah, I would agree. I went on my first coos deer hunt last fall. I had a rifle tag in Arizona, and I mean, they're cool. And now I feel like I have to kill one, because I didn't even see anything bigger than a spike on that hunt. But I'll kill one day, but I definitely would put mule deer way above any coos deer.
Yeah, and that's something that I've actually kind of been contemplating too, is applying for some rifle tags out there in Arizona specifically for koozies, and seeing if I can get on that, you know, 110, 120 inch range, you know, somewhere around there would be awesome someday. So
yeah, I mean, some of those like October and November coos deer hunts, I mean, at the time I drew it, I was a non-resident of Arizona, and I drew it with 0 points. It was the October tag, so you can draw those October and November ones for non-residents very easily.
Yeah, and I've been looking at some research on that. The only thing that sucks about that is that's when our whitetail rut around here is popping off around that November range. So that would be the only thing. Is it's tough for me to get away from here around that time. That's the only reason I haven't really got into rifle hunting out west a little more, is because a lot of those in Colorado, you know, your first and second season rifle around that late October and early November, and it's just tough for me to get away from leaving these rutting whitetail.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I've went on one whitetail hunt and sat in a tree stand for a week and didn't see a single deer. But I want to go on a whitetail hunt where I actually get to experience that rut. So it's on the list of things to do.
Yeah. Once you know, a lot of people, especially people out west, and I can understand it, when they come out here, they come from, you know, spot and stalking and being kind of more active, and then sitting in a tree stand, and it can get grueling, and it can test your patience, and it can, I mean, do that for 45 days in a row and then get one opportunity. So it's it can be grueling, but it's, once you outsmart that like 5.5-year-old or 6.5-year-old whitetail, I'm telling you, I've hunted everything. Like, I've hunted so many different species, from, you know, mature bulls to muleys to, you know, like I said, koozies to antelope to whitetail. Yeah. And to this day, I think the hardest animal to kill for me is, man, it would be, I wouldn't say, I said the smartest for me to hunt is definitely a mature, and I'm talking, if every animal was mature, a mature buck whitetail, I mean, that 5.5, 6.5-year-old, it's just tough to fool them, man. And this year, actually, there was a buck that I've been chasing for over 3 years now, and he was 7.5, and I finally caught up to him this year.
Nice.
And it was just, you know, they're just smart, you know, they know how to live, they know how to stay alive, even if they're only living on a 160-acre piece. It's like, you'd think you'd be able to catch up to them pretty regularly, you know, pretty easy, but hell, it took me 3 years to do that, so.
For sure. Yeah, yeah, that's, anybody that's ever hunted whitetail, that's what they tell me, that a big mature whitetail is one of the hardest things to hunt and to kill.
They are. You mess up one time on them, and there's a good chance you don't see them for the whole year, and that's what makes them tough, you know. It's like, sometimes muleys can be really pretty tough as well. I'm not going to say they're not, but you know, I've had multiple times where I bumped a big buck and then got on him again, you know, 4 hours later. So it's like, because it's just the terrain they live in. You can do that. You know, you can glass them and see where they go. Thick vegetation and habitat whitetail live in can make that a little tough.
For sure. Well, let's talk about elk. That's my favorite thing to hunt. And you've done some elk hunts over the last few years. So how did that start for you? And you've done some backcountry hunts as well. So I want to talk about all that.
For sure. So I guess my first elk hunt actually came in 2020. I guess kind of like a lot of other people, the pandemic made it to where, you know, you could travel a little more. And no one really had any jobs at the time. It seems like everyone was kind of off work. And so it seems like that's when Western hunting kind of started becoming the boom that it is today. And me, you know, like everyone else, kind of capitalized on it. And I went out to Idaho, actually, my first elk hunt. Okay. And ever since then, that was my first and only time to Idaho. And I want to get back there, but it's like every year, I mean, ever since then, they changed the regulations there as well and made it harder than hell to get on, you know, to even grab a tag. I know my first year I went there, I grabbed the tag in late July and hunted them September. And now if you don't grab it December 1st, then you're screwed. So, I went out there and just did a whole bunch of e-scouting, mainly just a ton of e-scouting for about a month and a half. And I get up there and me and my buddy, we hike into this area. It's like a 5 mile hike and we hike way back into the back country. And I'm not seeing too much sign and we keep going and keep going and it's getting later in the afternoon. And I just, when we got all the way back there, I just didn't see any sign. And I was like, man, we're just going to waste. If we try to stay here, we're just going to waste a few days in our 7 days we have. And I was like, let's pack all the way back out. And he was like, no, let's not do it. And I said, no, we need to. I was like, let's pack out. And finally he was like, okay, yeah, we'll do it. So by the time we get back to camp, it's dark, like way past dark. And I had another backup pin that I wanted to go to that night. I was like another hour drive. And we've never seen this country before. And so we eat dinner. And by the time we get to the new location, it's like midnight or 1 a.m. And we set up camp. And I'm thinking like, man, what did we just do? Like, I mean, now it's 1 a.m. We have no clue what we're doing. I set up camp and I get into bed. And about 300 yards up the mountain from us, I hear a bugle.
Nice.
And I was like, all right, you know, it's this game on. I was like, I'm glad we hiked out. And the next morning we get up and we start making our way to where I knew that bugle was. And we just start making our way up the mountain. And then I waited till about 5 minutes after light and let off a little locate bugle. And he fired off within a couple hundred yards. And what we did is I had my buddy back up, you know, about 50 yards, like everyone does. We both kind of had a little calling sequence going on. And then I see this bull and sure enough, he starts out about 150 yards and then starts making his way, you know, to us. And I cut him off with a bugle. And when I did that, he started raking and then just, I mean, charged in and shot him at 15 yards. So it was a solid 5x5, you know, big, heavy bull for that area in Idaho. It was super cool. I mean, I guess you could say my first day elk hunting ever, I stuck a good bull. So, you know, we did that. And after that, actually the smoke rolled in and it was just tough for us to locate anything, tough for us to glass anything after that. But so I got lucky, man, on that one. And then the last 3 years since I've been lucky enough to stick some bulls in Colorado. So,
okay. Nice. You've been doing the over-counter tag in Colorado or draw tags?
Draw tags. So draw tags. And the first year I did over-the-counter and I actually killed. And then last year I actually did draw tags, which was, you know, you only take 0 to 1 points or you buy a leftover. And I ended up getting on a good bull last year. I mean, snuck into his bed at, you know, 25 yards and ended up sticking him. So it's been fun, man. It's definitely a rush. I love September. It's one of my favorite things in the world, but you know, it's kind of weird for me though. It's like, I love it, but like you give me a muley, you give me a big mature mule deer and, or you give me a big mature elk and I'm chasing that muley 10 out of 10 times.
Really?
Yeah. I love chasing mule deer.
Yeah, they are fun. It's been a few years since I've done – I mean, I've done a little bit down here in Arizona, but since I've really got to chase, like when it comes to chasing mule deer, chasing them in the high country is my favorite thing. And it's been a few years since I've done it, but it's on the list for this year for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hard to beat when they're bachelored up like that.
Yeah, for sure. But how are you enjoying doing the backcountry thing, and what kind of like lessons have you learned as far as gear that works, doesn't work type thing?
Yeah. So these days I try to stay away from, I try to stay away from backcountry hunting. Now I've done it a couple times and it's brutal. Especially if you don't have time to scout in the summer, I found that it can be super brutal. If you don't have any intel on, or if you're not able to scout, like I'm not, because I'm located, 13 hours away from most of my high country stuff. And, or don't have any intel from friends living out there or anything. It's just kind of tough to pick a spot on the map and hike 5, 6, 7 miles in and spike camp, because you get back there and if there's no animals and like that, what I thought I was telling you, then you got to hike all the way back out. So, I like to stay mobile, as much as I can these days and find elk or find the deer first and then make a game plan. But, so that's kind of my approach these days, but I have done it a couple times and, I've learned each time that, the gear that I bring needs to be lighter and the amount of camera equipment that I have needs to be reduced. And then, that each time I go out there, my pack actually ends up dropping like 10 or 15 pounds, it seems like. Nice. Because I realize that I don't need to bring near as much stuff that I do the first time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I did a few backcountry hunts when I first started hunting, and it's been a couple years since I've been able to do one, but yeah, I agree. The first year you bring everything. Like I remember bringing like 3 like fuel canisters for a week long.
Yeah. Hunt.
And at the time I didn't know that I could get by with like one small one.
One.
For like 7 days. So
yeah, it's one of those things you learn over time, and it's, and then our clothes is another big thing. It's like people bring too many clothes, and it's like, you can just, you can wear that same pair of, merino or synthetic base layers. You can just wear that, you don't have to change especially if you're spike camping for 3 days or so, just tough it out. And that's another place that people seem to bring too much stuff. It's one of those things that you're either going to kill yourself going in, and then you're going to kill yourself more coming out if you bring too much stuff, because you're going to hopefully have a pack full of meat too. So definitely learned to condense my gear over the years.
Definitely. Definitely. Let's talk, before we get into the photography stuff, I want to talk about kind of what your archery setup is looking like today. What bow are you shooting? Arrows, broadheads, that type of thing.
Yeah. So right now I'm actually shooting 2 different PSEs. I'm shooting the Fortis 33, which is their aluminum flagship bow this year. And I've got the dialed Arxos on it with an ultra view scope, man, and with quattro bars. And it is just in the new EC2 cams, actually, which is the easiest drawing cam that I've ever experienced. Even smoother than the Evolve cam, the original. Yep. And it's you sacrifice a little speed with it, but it's, my gosh, it's so smooth. And right now I'm going through a little bit of left shoulder problems. So shooting this bow is money because it's so smooth. But I'm running that with the Method ZMRs.
Okay.
And, built out to about 475 grains. And it's, man, they're just bullets. They're so nice. So that's my setup there. And then my carbon setup, I've got the Mach 34, which is just an absolute beast of a bow.
Yeah, I love that bow. In my opinion, I think that's the best carbon bow out right now.
100% is. And the lightest and the only carbon that is produced in America. So, which is super cool.
Yeah.
PSE is doing some big things this year, it seems like, with the buyout and I think they're going to really prioritize some marketing this year, and they've got some really big plans, it seems like. So, but the carbon bow I'm running with, I had the S2 cams on it, and I'm actually switching over in the process back to the E2 cams and with quattro bars and an Arxos on that one as well, with the running the same arrow setup. I really don't change arrow setups throughout the year, no matter if I'm, hunting elk or whitetail. I mean, last year I shot my bull with 100 you know, with a 450 grain arrow and a swacker. So it blew right through it and no problem. So I don't try to change arrow setups too much. With a long draw, I can really just, seems like I can get away with about any, you know, shooting anything in America with it. So sure. Those are my two setups right now, man. They're straight shooters and I'm addicted to it. So
nice. So you said you're shooting swackers. So I'm guessing you're pretty much strictly mechanical over fixed blade for the most part.
Yeah, I am. I've shot mechanicals for probably 10 years now. And the only animal in the last probably 7 or 8 years that I've shot with a fixed blade, and I don't want to bash on any people who only shoot fixed blades or bash on companies, but I shot my Idaho bull because they had it outlawed to where you couldn't use mechanicals. I shot it with a Muzzy Trocar, 15 yards broadside. I mean, you couldn't put it in a better place and got like 8 inches of penetration. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, didn't even penetrate the hide on the other side. So, I don't know what happened if I, you know, hit a rib or dead on or something. I don't know, but it didn't do what I wanted it to. But, you know, I've shot that. I've shot just about every mechanical in the book, and the Schwackers are great. The Levi Morgan 261s are amazing.
Yep.
And then I got the G5 Mega Meats this year is kind of what I ran for whitetail, and just, I mean, a devastating hole.
Yeah.
So I'm a mechanical guy. I've never had a problem with them. Never have had a problem with them not opening or opening too early or anything like that.
I agree. Yeah, I'm pretty much strictly mechanicals for anything in North America. Shooting the Schwackers as well. I think it's the bigger 125 one, the Levi Morgan.
Oh yeah. Series. Yeah, the 261s series, yep. But the 125s, yeah, those are great too. I, you know, even not North America, I have a buddy who guides a lot, hunts a lot of Africa, and he shot a buffalo over in Africa here recently with a 480 grain arrow with a sever on it and blew right through it. Like penetrated the other side, and that thing just was dumping blood out of its mouth. And I mean, I don't get too, I mean, if, as long as your bow's perfectly tuned and you can put the arrow where it needs to go,
yep.
I don't get too wrapped up on arrow weight or anything like that. I think if you got just enough, if you got enough weight to where it's not sacrificing too much speed either, and you can shoot it where you want it and your bow's tuned, then you're going to kill just about anything.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you can hit it where you want, it doesn't matter what you have on there. So.
No, for sure.
All right. Cool, man. Let's talk about the photography stuff before we kind of wrap this up here and whenever we get to it. But the photography stuff is something that you do quite often, or I'd see it all over your Instagram, and it looks pretty cool. So how did you get into the photography and all that?
So I guess it'd be back in like 2018 or 2019, one of those times. I feel like I tell people this all the time too. I feel like I kind of always had like an eye for photography. Like I really liked aesthetic looking photos. I always had that. Like when I saw a really cool photo, like a more aesthetic one, I knew I liked it. So I was like, you know, I'm going to give it a try. So I just told the wife, I was like, hey, I'm going to go buy a camera. And she was like, what? And I was like, yeah, I want to start filming my hunts, and I want to start, you know, playing over some photography. When I first got into it though, I was more video. Like I really wanted to make some videos. I really wanted to get into, you know, filming hunts and things like that. So I went out and bought a camera with a cheap lens, and it was absolutely terrible. Like, like worse than like you could take a photo on an iPhone and it would be better than, which iPhones these days are absolutely amazing. I recommend a lot of people to get that when they're first starting. But I mean, you could just take a picture with an old, I guess you could say an old Nokia phone, and it would be better than what my photos were. So, but then I quickly learned after a while, I started getting a little better, but I quickly learned to, that I hated video and kind of wanted to focus more on photography, and just kind of ran with it from there, man. I've searched and probably watched just about every video you could think of on the internet related to photography and how to better myself at it. And, you know, I've kind of developed a style that I like and have kind of, you know, kept evolving from there. So it's fun, man. It's addicting. And I tell people, like, I love it almost as much as hunting. But if you gave me the, if someone, you know, told me you had to pick this or that to give up for the rest of your life, I would put the camera down and keep the bow in my hand, no doubt. So, but yeah, it's something that I love just as much.
Nice, nice. So something that I've heard you talk about before and Aaron Snyder talk about before is like guys that are looking to start with photography, one of the best ways to start, at least on a budget, is with your iPhone. So how are you doing that? Because that's kind of the position I'm in right now. Like I have an iPhone 14 and like it takes decent pictures, but I feel like I'm the limiting factor there of not knowing what to do with it or how to, you know, make those pictures look good. So for guys on that boat that just want to start taking pictures and all they have is an iPhone, what can they do?
So, you know, what's funny is if you go on my profile and look at, I would say like 80% of my flat lay pictures that I take, most of those flat lays, like those gear lays, almost all of those are taken with an iPhone. And I mean, the iPhone can do so much from the wide angle to, I mean, the megapixels and resolution of an iPhone these days is absolutely insane. And I can't wait to, and I, that's what I run is the iPhone 14 Pro Max, and it can do so much stuff. I mean, it can shoot 4K in slow motion. It can shoot 240 frames a second. I mean, it's nuts. I use it to tune my bow. Like I use that super slow motion to video my arrow flight to see kind of how it's flying. And, but yeah, I just recommend, man, just what I do is I've watched just about every video on Peter McKinnon's on YouTube on how to better myself at photography. And a lot of it comes down to editing and creative angles and things like that. So, an iPhone is a great tool, and it just like all it takes that person to really be creative and learn angles and learn composition and learn lighting and how to light the subject and things like that. So it's like you can give someone a $5,000 camera and that has no clue how to work it. You can give a professional photographer an iPhone, and you know, 9 out of 10 times that professional photographer is going to make a much better photo than the guy who has no clue what he's doing. So with a really expensive rig. So it's just like anything else. It just takes, you know, trial and error and practice and you'll get better at it.
Definitely. Are you editing pretty much most of those pictures on your phone, or do you transfer to the computer and edit there?
So I used to transfer to my computer all the time. But it just got to the point where it just took way too long. Because by the time, you know, you transfer, you take, you know, and this is another thing that happens when you get better at photography is a lot of people, especially when they're first beginning, they go out and they shoot, they'll put it in. I use mine on black, like a high shutter as well, to where, you know, you hold down the shutter and it takes 50 photos real quick.
Yeah.
But what you learn when you get a little more experience is like you crop that image, or you can, you know, set the stage to where you only have to take one or two photos of the subject, and you know what it's going to look like. You don't have to take 50 of them. So all that does for you is more post work of sifting through those photos. So, what I used to do is I would take way too many photos and then I'd dump them all onto my computer. And then I would have to separate the JPEGs from the raw photos and go through the JPEGs, which is a smaller file. So you can burn through it on your computer really quick. Mm-hmm. And then write down each number of the photo that I like, and then go into Lightroom and upload the raw files that match that correlating number into it, and then edit those photos, then and then export it. Well, nowadays I literally can just upload the raw file straight to my phone from my camera and edit it in Lightroom mobile and then export it to my phone from there. It takes a quarter of the time. And I found that the colors are going to be the exact same, because sometimes on a computer, the screen on the computer is going to be a different display, or, you know, it's going to look different. The colors might look a little different than it is on your phone. So that's what I didn't like either. Sometimes when I would go to export it from my computer, the colors would be completely different and I didn't like it. So, everything's on my phone now. I mean, all the photos on my Instagram, I've edited every single one of those off my phone, and it takes me 2 seconds to do it. And sometimes if I have to edit something out, I'll throw it in Photoshop on the computer, but 9 out of 10 times I don't have to.
Nice. So you said you're using Lightroom for most of your editing?
Yeah. Yep. Lightroom mobile. It's amazing. It's super powerful.
Nice. When it comes to like editing your photos, like, are you pretty much going through like the same editing process every time, as far as what adjustments you're making to the photo, or how?
Yeah, that depends on light. That depends on lighting for sure. So if it's really bright outside, I like to kind of stick to more like of a moody, darker cinematic look. And that's just something that I kind of built the last couple of years, and it's just what catches my eye, what I like. And like I said, everyone's style changes over time. So I found that photos that I shot, I mean, I edited 3 months ago, I'll go back and look at them and I'm like, man, that looks like crap. So then I re-edit it. I like it better. So everyone's style just changes. But yeah, I guess you could say I kind of edit the same each photo, but like I'll turn a lot of my, my exposure down. I'll light the subject. I'll make the subject pop a little more. But yeah, it kind of just depends on what the ambient light is outside, how light it is, if it's already moody and dark, and it really just kind of depends.
Nice. What kind of limitations are there to the iPhone? Like if once you kind of, you know, start taking pictures with your phone, decide you like it, at what point are you going to be limited by that and you need to start like looking at a camera as far as like the type of photos you can take?
Focal range. So like, obviously if you're not gonna, I mean, if you have a subject that's 5 feet away, you know, you could take some pretty cool photos, or there's just some different angles you could take with an iPhone. That's super cool. With the ultra wide angle view is super awesome with the iPhone. Flat lay pictures are really nice with them because it's the iPhone's super crisp. But if you're going to shoot portraits, and really get that soft background or that nice bokeh to where it makes the subject really pop, that's something that an iPhone is going to be pretty limited to. So if you're going to start shooting subjects that are a little further away, obviously if you're shooting sports or wildlife or anything like that, you're going to have to get a camera because you're not going to be able to reach it with the focal length. But, and then if you start cropping in, it's just going to make the image a lot more grainy on an iPhone. So, so you could do, ultra wide angle views, you could do flat lays, you can do some product photography and things like that with iPhones and make them look great. But I think the biggest thing starting is just kind of starting, because if you can master a look on an iPhone and taking really, really good cinematic looking photos, and once you switch to a camera, it's going to be easy for you.
So for guys that have,
been doing the iPhone thing and they've decided that photography is really something that they like, what, in your opinion, are kind of those next steps to take as far as getting a camera and lenses, all that stuff? What's your recommendation there?
Budget, honestly. It depends on their budget. I mean, you can go from, a $500 camera, you can go up to a $5,000 camera. It really just depends on the person's budget. And what I tell people, though, is it's not really the camera. It's like you said, you got to learn it first. So do a lot of research, learn photography first with your iPhone. If you want to jump straight into it, then that's good. But whatever you can afford comfortably, that's what you should buy. It's just like glass, just like binoculars, You don't want to skimp out on something cheap, because what happens, and I did this at first, but I didn't know how, if you're unsure how long you're going to stick with it, then obviously you don't want to go dump $5,000 into it. But what I did is I knew I wanted to stick with it, but I went out and bought a Canon 80D, which is a great crop sensor camera. It's still a good one today. They've updated it a couple times. I think they have the 90D now. But it's a good camera, but I went out and got a cheap lens, and then really, immediately was like, man, I got to upgrade lenses. So I spent money on that lens and then just had to go buy more. So definitely just whatever you can afford and budget wise, then definitely get that. I recommend to anyone first starting, and it also depends on what kind of photography they want to do. Obviously, if they want to do wildlife to where they have to shoot a subject that's a good distance away, you're going to have something that has a really good zoom. If you just want to do some portrait style, really soft, really nice and crisp photos, has a great background bokeh, if you're shooting a subject, obviously within 10 feet or so, then I recommend someone starting out to get like a 50 millimeter, like a 1.8. Okay. It's a great lens, especially starting out, and you can get those things for like $150, $200. So it's, they're super cheap, super awesome, crisp lens. Actually every manufacturer's done a great job with them, to make them really affordable. And then you can just go up from there. So it's like, right now my main lenses, I just actually picked up one, but my main lenses are a Canon. It's a 50 millimeter 1.2, and then there's a a 35 millimeter 1.4 and then the 70 to 200 RF 2.8, which is my newest lens, which is absolutely amazing. But obviously I didn't start out with those lenses because all that stuff together is, you know, you're $8,000 or $9,000 in the lenses and camera body right there. So it's like, I didn't start out that way, obviously, but just depends, man, on your budget.
Nice. So are you mostly using Canon stuff now? I know that's kind of a big debate in the photography world as far as which camera you use.
Yeah. So it's really funny. I love Canon mainly because I love the colors that they right out of the body. The colors in the Canon to me seem a little more saturated. They seem a little more vibrant, and that's what I like. The colors just seem to pop a little more right out of the body. You know, every camera company and manufacturer has their niche. All of them are great these days. It's like arrows or bows, you know?
Yeah.
There's not like these days, there's like not a company who makes a bad bow or like not a company that makes a bad arrow. You know, it's cameras are the same way. Like there's not, I mean, each company is going to have like a high end camera that does really, really good. It just, each of them are going to have their own little, you know, qualities and that you like a little better. And what I like about a Canon over a Sony is, the user friendliness, you know, the Canon settings are so easy. I've picked up Sony's before and it's like trying to solve a Rubik's cube to change the exposure, man. But then, you know, obviously if you have that for a while, you get to know it and you like it. But I actually have a Nikon Z50, which is a little pocket rocket mirrorless camera. Okay. It's amazing. It's not very expensive. I mean, this is the reason I got it is because I liked it as a backup and I like it to be able to throw it in my pocket. And literally it's that small. I can throw it in my pocket. It's super small. But it's a great camera. I actually used it in Yellowstone a couple years back with a Canon 1-400 lens that I threw an adapter on to where I could use a Canon lens, and it did amazing. Shot unbelievable photos of wildlife with it. So I'm not really, you know, too picky when it comes to it. I've always shot Canon and love the colors and the user friendliness but yeah, there's so many different brands. Just kind of pick which one that you're more comfortable with.
Nice. So are you doing photography like as a career now, or is it still just a hobby, or how's that going for you?
It's still just a hobby. Like, you know, I work with a lot of great companies that I shoot content for. So it's like, I do it on the side. It is something that I wouldn't mind making a full-time gig at some point, but I actually do. My main gig is I'm a safety consultant for an insurance company actually. So I work from home a lot and I travel out weekly to basically make sure that the commercial insurance properties that we have aren't going to burn their buildings down or things like that. That's about as simple as I could explain it, but that's what I do for a 9-to-5 and kind of do all this other stuff on the side.
Nice. So kind of getting off the photography stuff, what do you have coming up this year? I know total archery season's about to start up, and it seems like you go to at least one of those, if not multiple of those a year. So that's coming up soon. Yeah. What do you got planned for hunting season in the fall?
Man, this, once this Oklahoma tack hits here next week, it is game on, and it's like hunting season's going to be here before you know it after that. Because I go to this year, I think I'm scheduled to go to this one, San Antonio, Pennsylvania, potentially Colorado and Utah. So gotcha. I will be at a ton of them this year. So it's like every month I have something early May. And what's great is they're on the weekends too. So I can just, you know, catch a flight somewhere and go for the weekend and come back and not miss too much. So, nice. In May, the wife and I are going to Alaska for 10 days. So we'll be there, early May and then all the total archery challenges. And then, I mean, I've got so much on the agenda this summer and then, you know, September is going to be here before you know it. And I'll be back in Colorado. Hopefully I'm throwing out some applications right now for Colorado to see if I can draw at a couple different units. And, so I've got an elk hunt in Colorado scheduled for sure. Hopefully a Kansas whitetail tag in my pocket this year. And then Texas, Oklahoma, Arizona Muleys again. And so, yeah, it's another full schedule this year.
Nice.
And I've got to throw antelope in there somewhere, so I don't know where I'm going to fit that. But
nice. For Total Archery Challenge, are you somebody that likes to change up your setup to be more well-suited for that, or you just go out there and shoot your hunting setup?
So this year I'm going to be shooting both my hunting setups, just depending on what I'm kind of feeling like. I know, I'm just going to be shooting a 34 at this next tack, the Mach 34 mm-hmm. with the same hunting arrows, that I use. Like I said, I won't change it for anything. These build out to 478 or 475 to 478, somewhere in there. With the Mach 34, I can shoot out to like 100. And I mean, it's a pretty heavy arrow for tack, but they're dead shooters, man. They're great. They don't have a lot of wind drift, and they're tougher than hell. I mean, these method arrows, what's really funny is that's kind of what they pride themselves on too, is I actually shot I was shooting with some buddies the other day, and I shoot a hinge full time now, and I love it, and I'm very, very accurate with it. But we were at about 80 yards, and I had pulled back, and as I was about to, I was already past the click. My buddy made me laugh by saying something stupid, and I just completely jerked it and sent the arrow over the target and hit a steel trailer, actually dead on. I mean, hit a steel trailer, and I was like, that thing's busted. And I get up there, and the arrow is perfectly fine. So that's another reason I'm ready to run these, is I'm not really scared of rebar anymore with these in those targets with these arrows.
For sure. What components are you shooting up front? Is it like aluminum, titanium, stainless? What do you have up front?
These are stainless, actually, is what it is. So it's a stainless half out that goes on the front of it. So total arrow weight, like around 475, 480, somewhere in that area, like I said. And they're great. I'm actually running the AAE 23s on the back with a four fletch, and they're awesome, man. They're great. I love the 23s, but I actually fletched up some of the Super Sabres. I'm not sure if you heard of what Kyle's doing over there. So he's an engineer and absolutely like a super genius, and he made these Super Sabres. And when I say they're quiet, I mean they are noticeably more quiet than any other vein. It's really funny. I listened to a Kafaru cast yesterday with Aaron, and I believe his name is Ben with Iron Will. Yeah. And he was talking about the arrow setups and what they've kind of found and stuff too. And he said that the Max Hunters, which is a higher profile vein, kind of similar to the Super Sabres, honestly, a shorter vein, a little higher. I've actually shot those in the past too, and I think these Super Sabres, in my opinion, are even quieter. I shot them next to the 23s the other day for the first time, and I didn't even know my arrows were loud, and they're not loud. I mean, they're not loud at all, but they're just like any other vein, in my opinion. The 23s are, but when I shot those a couple times, and then I immediately shot the first arrow with these Super Sabres, and it was a noticeable difference. Arrow flight I found is very good with them as well, but the 23s are also amazing. I mean, I love that shorter, lower profile vein. I can get a lot more clearance with the 23s than I can with these Super Sabres. So from my housing, so each of them has their kind of, benefits, and each of them are going to have a little, give and take to them. But that's my setups I'm running this year for tack. I'm going to be running a little bit of both fletchings just to kind of do some testing.
Nice. Yeah, I've been wanting to check out those Super Saber veins. I've been shooting tack veins for the last few years, and I really like those. But But arrow setups is like the one thing that I like tinkering around with, just trying different things, different arrow weights, figuring out what's going to fly the best and shoot the best.
Yeah, so those I would compare them to the tack veins, actually. I love tack veins as well. I had some and don't tell Levi this, but I had some adhesion issues on my part too for a little while. But I wasn't using a primer pin, and I think I was just kind of rushing a little bit of the process. So I think it was 99% my fault. But
if you don't use the primer pin, they won't stick. But
yeah, and I do like the. I do like tack veins though, because I like veins that are a little more rigid and a little like heat veins. I like those too. It's like The only thing about AEE, it seems like if you say you leave it in the back of your truck with your quiver down, or if you shoot through one target, like those vanes are going to warp. What I found with these super savers and tack vanes and heat vanes is they're a little more rigid, so you can get away with that. They bounce back really quick. You can shoot through targets and they're fine. And so yeah, tack vanes are awesome, man. I would compare them to them.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of those ones. But AEs are great too. Like I said, those heat vanes, and then the super savers are on the list to try for sure.
Definitely. And in his wraps, so Kyle sells those custom wraps as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he makes it. I don't know what kind of material he makes them out of, but the wraps are 10 times better than any other wrap that I've ever used. Like from boning wraps to something like, you know, your basic boning wraps you go get from Shields or something.
Yeah.
The material is completely different. They're so much more sturdy. They're easier to work with. The arrows just seem to stick so much better to them. So, and they're freaking sick. Like, he does an awesome job with the graphics on them.
All right. Yeah, I'll have to check them out. How are you liking that dialed sight? I know that's kind of the hot sight to have right now in the archery world. So how are you liking it?
I absolutely love it. Those guys over there are doing freaking amazing. They're geniuses over there as well. It's like all the stuff that they're doing, and they're super innovative. They're always on, you know, thinking of other things that are trying to step up the bar. And it's like, at first I had my doubts about it. When I first had it, I was like, I don't know if this is going to be, let's give it a try. And it took me a couple months to get it dialed down, no pun intended, to where I really liked it. And ever since then, it's, oh my gosh, it's unbelievably easy to set up. It is built like a tank. Everyone I have is just built like a tank. You could drop it from 20 feet. I don't think it would hurt it. Yeah. They are continuing, like every day, it seems like I hear something else from the guys over there about how they're coming up with new stuff. And, it's, you can get from the angled, vertical bar, you can get way more distance out of it. Like with my Mach 34, when I was running like a 450 grain arrow, I never tested it, but I'm pretty sure I could shot out to like 150 yards with my top pin still. Like, it was unbelievable how much clearance I had. So, yeah. And I mean, it's undoubtedly the most aesthetic and best looking on the market. The customization is unmatched. So, I love it, man. I'm a big fan of them, and I'm glad that they've done well and taken off like they have.
For sure. What pin configuration are you shooting? Kind of go to for that.
So I actually, on my 34, I'm running the UltraView 3XL housing with the regular, like a Spot Hog Fast Eddie, a two pin stack. Yep. And then on the, that was with my Fortis, I'm sorry. And then on the Mach 34, I'm actually running the dialed three pin stack that they have. And that's what I'm running there with a bubble on top. And after getting used to that bubble on top for so long, and then switching back to this UltraView with the bubble on bottom, I actually prefer the bubble on top way more. So I actually might switch back to, the dial housing on my Mach, on my 30 or the Fortis, I'm sorry, as well, because I just like the bubble on top. It gives it your sight picture so much more clean, and I just feel like it's an easier on the eyes to look up and see the bubble instead of looking down. That's just personal preference though.
For sure. You said you're shooting a hinge, right?
I am. Yeah.
Which one are you shooting?
The Trueball HBC, so the Honey Badger, and it's nice. It's freaking awesome. Yeah. I shot the UltraView for a while, and the UltraView button's great. They did a very good job with the button. But the hinge, I wasn't the biggest fan of the hinge, and no knock on those guys over there, because I love those guys too, and they do absolutely amazing on just about everything they touch. Uh-huh. But I don't know what it was. I just didn't shoot it very well. Okay. It didn't fit my hands really like I liked it. Huh. But some people love it, and I just kind of had a little bit of a problem with the dual moons slipping every now and then. And so I went out and got the Trueball HBC, and I put a fast moon in it to where it can, I get to the click super fast, and it has made my shot process, 10 times better than it ever has been. And I'm shooting my bow, 20 times better and more consistent than I ever have. So I'm excited. I would recommend that that release to anyone, especially getting into archery and wanting to kind of start riding and go with a hinge at first. I would recommend that one to anyone.
For sure. Are you hunting with the hinge as well?
I am. I'm full-time hinge now. Like I'm not, I don't think I'll ever touch a thumb button ever again. I might regret that saying that because who knows, I've never actually hunted with a hinge before. This will be my first season doing it, but I don't see myself doing it ever. I don't ever, as accurate and as comfortable as I am with a hinge right now, I don't see myself ever switching back. But like I said, it might cost me a buck or two and then I switch back, who knows. But but at the moment, I don't see myself switching.
Yeah, I've been shooting a hinge pretty much full time. I just started doing some like competitive archery as well, and I was going to shoot a button because my groups at distance are a little bit smaller with a thumb button, but I can't shoot a button very well under pressure. So
yeah,
first 3D tournament I went to, like first half of the course, I was okay. And then the second half just could not get that button to go off at all and just made horrible shots. So
yeah,
I've gone to a hinge full time now.
It just seems like it solves a lot of problems. And that if that button's there, man, and you have any doubt in your mind, it's real easy to punch it.
So yep.
It's sure. Super, super easy. So, but I will say, if you're learning a hinge, it's a bad shot with a hinge is going to be the worst shot you've ever shot in your life. If you dump that hinge, it's going places that there's not even a target. So, no, once you get it down, you know, it cleans up your shot process, your form, your confidence. I recommend it to anyone.
For sure, man. We'll get you out of here. We've been on here for almost an hour, but question that I try to ask everybody at the end is for a book recommendation. So I don't know if you're a big reader or not, but is there a book that you kind of have liked over the years or something like that?
You know, to be completely honest, I haven't picked up, and I need to. My wife's a big reader. She loves reading, but I think I have adult ADD to where like I have to be fidgeting with something and I have to be doing something. So late in the evening, late at night, like I'm either like building arrows, tinkering with something. So it's like, I just don't have the patience to read. I know a lot of people probably say that, but like, I feel like when I'm reading these days, I'm thinking about other things that I want to be doing. So it's like, I really don't read much, man. If I had to recommend something else, though, as far as like podcasts.
Yeah, go for it. I've had people podcasts, do podcasts or motivational speakers or anything like that.
So. Dude, I mean, anything, other podcasts that I would listen to, man, on the regular is anything with Aaron Farucast. He has some amazing people on there. And then I've been really hammering the Keep Hammering Collective with Cam Haynes, man. He's had some awesome guys on there too. So fun to see him getting started and started to kind of take off with that side of things. So those two are amazing. I know they're probably pretty cliche and everyone in the world probably already listens to them, but that's what I'm going with because that's the two that are usually on in my car when I'm on long rides right now.
Yep. I'm the same. Those are probably my two top podcasts that I listen to for sure. But cool, man. Well, before we get you out of here, how can people find you and see all your photography and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I'm really only on Instagram these days. You know, I really don't do much with YouTube or I've actually never been on TikTok. Actually, I have been on TikTok and they banned my very first video, so I stopped getting on it. So you can find me on Instagram at ryan.haynes.oso or just Ryan Haynes on Instagram. And I'd be happy to help you guys out with any questions you have or photography questions or just kind of want to see some of my day-to-day activities.
Awesome, man. Well, Ryan, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Glad we could finally link up. And, thanks for coming on, man.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem at all. You have a good day.
You too.
Bye. All right, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed that podcast with Ryan Haynes. I definitely had a good time talking with him. But before I let you guys go, make sure you guys check out the podcast on Instagram. It's barely_backcountry_podcast. And then my personal is c.dillashaw. Again, give the podcast a like, a follow, a share, all those good things. All that helps out a ton. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you guys on the next one.